Good morning, 7:37 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Last week we had Gay Valamont on. She is the Democrat candidate for Congressional District 1, the seat vacated by Matt Gaetz when he was tapped to be AG, which of course did not work out. But tomorrow we have an election. There's some writing candidates, but the primary two candidates are Gay Valamont for the Democrats and Jamie Petronas, the current CFO for the state of Florida. He is on the line with us now. Mr. Petronas, Jimmy, Chief, I don't know what to call you exactly, but welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir. Jimmy? I got to turn his phone on. There we go. Sorry about that, Jimmy. Go ahead. Welcome back to the show, sir.
I said, I like Jimmy. Jimmy's just fine.
All right, perfect.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I didn't ask you what music you like. You said surprise me. At first, I was going to go Beyonce, and then I thought, you can't go wrong with Eric Clapton. We'll just do that. So let's get just a detailed question. It's not so much about your candidacy, but it is relevant. Your last day as CFO is today. How are you enjoying your last day? And B, has the governor named somebody to replace you yet?
No, he has not. I have not talked to the governor in a couple weeks. And look, it's his decision to make. My concern is just it's a very important job. There's the company. It's got skilled people that keep the trains running on time. But at the end of the day, if somebody wants a paycheck, the governor's got to appoint a CFO because there's not a signature on file after midnight tonight to sign the check.
Wow. Well, okay, that's not ideal. I know you had said recently, I think you were talking to our afternoon guys about how, you know, you wanted there to be some overlap so you could train the new person, and I agree with that, so seems like not the best way to go, but okay, fair enough. So a lot of things in this election, you know, a lot of things related to you. And of course, you know, your ad campaign has primarily been, largely been about President Trump's endorsement, which of course he endorsed you. So I figured it'd be worthwhile to talk about, since you're going to be in Congress, you're theoretically the check and balance against the presidency, you know, things where you might agree or disagree with the president and kind of where you stand on this. How about the Department of Education? He cannot close it, but he's trying to close it. Cannot do that without congressional approval. What's your perspective as a potential congressman?
Well, and when I looked at what he's proposed with the Department of Education is carving out some of those essential programs and putting them in other silos that actually kind of complement them. So school lunch programs, some of those different programs that are there, moving them and establishing them. But look, I think he is trying to do exactly what he's done on the campaign trail. He's trying to eliminate some of the bureaucracy that is there that maybe needs to be reevaluated, and nothing else. So this is no different than what he's done at the southern border. You know, the threats that he has made publicly with whatever he has expressed towards the cartels or rebuilding the wall or the fight for Mexico, it creates such a verbal deterrent that the traffic has come to a crawl, okay? And at the same time, those men and women standing guard on the border actually know that there's somebody in Washington, D.C. that has their back. Buddies of mine that are Border Patrol said, especially back during the started in the Obama administration, it was like, hands off, don't touch anybody. So just being able to know you have a commander-in-chief that wants to be a commander-in-chief, that wants to lead, that wants to give you the known strength there behind you when you're doing your job, goes a long ways for those guys doing their job.
On tariffs, which has obviously been a major news item for several weeks now, we're about ready on Wednesday to put in even higher tariffs on auto imports. Other tariffs are already in place. The administration keeps calling them tax cuts. There is no universe in which a tariff is a tax cut. I don't know why they keep saying that. But what's your perspective on tariffs? Do you believe they're tax cuts? What do you think of the way the president's handling this issue?
You know, I think just like when they rolled out the department, they talked about instead of the department, the IRS, it was going to be the external revenue office. I think the president has gone back and looked at all these different ways that we've been doing business, and we're all scratching our head of how we have a disadvantage moving our products into other nations. And it's just the type of tax they levy on a U.S. product when it makes dockage at any of those ports. So, you know, he's pushing back. You know, he's definitely looking for other forms of revenue that aren't a direct tax to the citizens of the United States. So where you have our countries that have been a beneficiary of it, and look, I'm sure there's some diplomatic goods that goes from allowing them to do that. But some of those things is enough's enough. it's time for us to sit down and revisit how we're doing business with you. And you know what? In some cases, you've seen most recently in Canada and in Mexico, where, you know, his willingness to go there has brought them to the table with more resources at the border to try to push back on the fentanyl problem that we've got. So, I mean, I think this is all part of his strategy. And at some point, somebody will blink, but I doubt it will be President Trump.
Yeah, he's not much of a blinker, apologizer. Oh, I had that wronger. You know, that's not really so much his thing. speaking of, you kind of mentioned about the border and some other things and tariffs, obviously, we've been talking about. But he's been talking about Canada as the 51st state. He's been talking about Greenland. He's even mentioned, you know, he keeps being willing to disqualify military action to acquire Greenland. Of course, he's talked about Panama. But particularly when it comes to Canada and Greenland and the issue of not ruling out military action, I want to get your thoughts on that. Because, again, you know, I mean, God, declarations of war come from Congress, of course. But what's your thought about acquiring Northern Territory or Northeastern Territory?
So with the Northern Territory, I mean, I think what you had an inept weak leader in Justin Trudeau, and the president knew that. He saw this guy as an empty suit that, you know, would bounce around, that's good looking. And, I think President Trump felt like, no, this guy's got a glass jaw. And so he goes and punches him in the mouth. He gets him to go out there and start having to defend, you know, this claim that Canada's going to be the 51st state. And I think a lot of times, I mean, I think the president truly enjoys making this type of banter, and then the world has to determine whether or not he's telling the truth or not. So, I mean, I think you're going to see that as something, yeah, look, will he go into the 51st state? Absolutely. You know, will it happen? You know, maybe. You know, I just don't see, I don't see him going to war to take over Canada now. With Greenland, I think Greenland, you've got, you've got a Denmark who probably doesn't really, you know, put any investment into Greenland. It's not been something they have ultimately, you know, tried to make a big argument for other than on paper. But I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, there was somebody was running the math the other day, and you could pay every person in Greenland like $2 million and give them health care for life, and you could take over Greenland without shooting a single shot. So I would think anything's on the table simply because there's a national security value to Greenland that I think is legit and real. There's a mineral value to it too. And look, China, we have been asleep at the wheel over the last 4 years with what China has done to colonize the Caribbean, Africa, the Panama Canal, and the Biden administration just allowed this to go rampant.
No, I totally agree about the minerals. In fact, I was just looking at a map of Greenland, and the perimeter is all, I mean, it's copper, molybdenum, lead, it's strong, you know, it's everything we could possibly want. And, you know, to pull it off would be a pretty nice economic reward. That's the military thing that freaks me out. One more on the present that is, maybe two more, that are kind of entertaining and interesting. The president is talking about maybe wanting to be elected for, well, not elected, but because he can't be elected, but to be president again for a third term in creative ways. Do you believe in term limits? This is a big issue for, you know, conservatives in Northwest Florida. Do you believe in term limits? Should there be term limits on the, you know, for example, on Congress? Do you believe president should be President Trump should be able to be president again for a third term?
So, and holistically, you know, I like term limits. But here's the reality of it. Look, I've been in Tallahassee, and I never sought out being a fixture in Tallahassee. But I do know this. When you have term limits, the deep state gets stronger, at least when you have somebody. So this is kind of a little bit of the checks and balances you have in Washington with it. Now, do you have people up there that need to go? Absolutely. Oh, my God, there's people that need to go. But it's just as we've seen in different election cycles, where you get entrenched members of Congress, when they stop paying attention to their constituents aren't stupid. Their constituents will throw them out. And it happens every single election cycle. You get an elected out there who really thinks they know better than their own constituents, and their own constituents get fed up with that treatment. It is what it is. I tell people all the time, if you don't hold your electeds accountable, you get the government you deserve. And this is exactly why, you know, I've made a commitment to open up a constituent services office there in Pensacola You know, it's been crickets out of my opponent about what she wants to do for just give better constituent services back to the citizens of Escambia County. So, you know, I'm looking forward to hitting the ground running, making a difference. And I tell people, Jimmy Patronis is not a show horse. Jimmy Patronis is a workhorse.
Do you like what you're seeing out of Doge? Is Doge going too far, too fast, doing it just right, going too slow? What's your general take on what's happening? Or should Congress be exerting more influence in stopping it?
Well, but here's what's happening. So you get members of Congress that have been just recently elected. I met a member of Congress from a state up north. He was in private business his whole entire life, has never been in government, never been a legislator, never done any of this. These guys don't know where to start. So then when that happens, you know, they're drinking out of a fire hose for the first, you know, year and a half or so. So what Doge is doing, it is bringing to light. It's almost like a handbook of these are the ways your budget is being proposed and spent in the United States. Me personally, I think it's enlightening to see where these dollars are going. I think it's important that people should have to stand to and defend why these dollars are in the budget the way they are. And, you know, we from time to time have done some really innovative sunset review process. That means, you know, if you can't defend it, it goes away in Tallahassee. We need more of that in D.C. And that's exactly what I think you're going to ultimately see with Doge. Is you're going to see, you know, all right, guys, we're going to force you to reauthorize the existence of this particular agency or this particular appropriation. If the government can't defend it, well, you know what? Then it's obvious it needs to go away, because there's a lot that is done for the importance of a single mission at a time and place in our country. And then, you know what? It goes on autopilot because there's nobody there to manage it or champion it anymore. It's like a zombie business.
Last question that relates to President Trump. This may be the most controversial one yet. Are you ready?
Okay.
What do you call the body of water to our south?
Oh, gosh, that's the Gulf of America.
No, Jimmy, no! No. Come on, brother. Come on. Gulf of Mexico.
I hear you.
I see it both ways.
But you know what? Here's what this guy is trying to do. He is trying to make our country great again. He's trying to bring some pride back to it. And so, yeah, look, is he stirring the pot? Absolutely. Is he bending some people's, you know, nose out of joint? Absolutely. At the end of the day, I know this. I know he cares about our country. And this is what I'm going to do. People said, well, gosh, you know, what are you going to do? All you do is keep on talking about President Trump. You know, I'm going to leverage my relationship with President Trump for the betterment of District 1. So when it comes to the resources, the access, the decisions that give us an opportunity to do better, to fix something, you know what? I'm going to use it all day long. That's, you know, that's what you do. You build relationships. And if the president of the United States wants to see Jimmy Patronis in Congress, by God, I'm going to be a busy person, because I feel like we've got a lot of good to do in Northwest Florida.
Your opponent is very much an advocate of gun restrictions, gun control. I am assuming you are in the other direction, but specific questions: state of Florida, bill filed by Michelle Salzman, would reduce the purchase age for long barrel rifles and shotguns to 18 in Florida. But also at the federal level, we have a restriction on handguns. I think of the handgun as the primary concealed carry weapon, the primary weapon of self-defense in your home. If you go to Congress, are you pushing to get the age? I think we just lost him. Would you grab him again, John? I think he's, is he locked in there? Hey, Jimmy, are you there, sir?
Yep.
We just lost you for a second.
All right. The 18 versus 21 bill.
Yeah, but hold on just a second. But specifically for handguns also, because at the federal level, you would be in a position to change that law too. Should 18 and 19 year olds be able to purchase handguns and concealed carry and shotguns and long barrels both?
Yeah, I'm okay at age 18. Here's one thing I think is important, though. I was in the restaurant business for 30 years, and I've seen a lot of these young kids start me at age 16, and now they're in their 30s and 40s, and they're family. And so they go out and they buy guns, and the first thing I demand that they do is go out to a range and go learn how to use it. And unfortunately, a lot of people, they buy guns, and they have no idea what they've got in their hands. And you see how they handle them. They don't respect them. You know, I grew up since age six shooting a 410 shotgun. So, I mean, you need to understand the firepower of what you got. And that's the biggest thing, is just get in a position where you learn what you've got.
You know, I completely agree with that. So you said 18 is, you're good with 18. Okay, which is what I thought you said at the beginning.
I'm telling you, at age 18, you can go into the Army. You can serve our nation. You can smoke cigarettes. You know, you can't drink. But you know what? By God, if you can go serve and protect our country at 18, then I think you should be able to buy a firearm also to defend yourself.
Last question, and I ask you this one just because it's become such a flashpoint here locally. I've been talking about this all day, but I know you don't have control over this, but the UWF Board of Trustees issue, where we had so many vacancies and the governor has now filled them with people who do not live here. Okay, and that's a concern. And I mean, to be honest, a lot of people have raised that question about you being very close to the district, but not quite in the district, although you're from the Panhandle. So I want you to address maybe that a little bit, even though you and I talked about that the last time you were on. But your thoughts about the UWF Board of Trustees appointments, and maybe talking to a community where you're going to have a lot of influence if you get elected to Congress. What do you think about this?
Look, I think trustees, and I've seen a lot of trustees come and go over my years in Tallahassee. I think trustees should have a tie, a nexus back to the university that they're representing. Whether you're a graduate there, whether you live in that community, whether you're a regional impact, because your trustees should also be there to leverage what the understanding and the needs of the community are based on the curriculum and mission of the university that is servicing that area. So, I mean, if you look at all the different programs at UWF, then you really should have a trustee that it doesn't really hurt when you got a trustee that's a degree of separation somewhere there in the community, somewhere in one of its associated industries or one of its curriculums. And so, you know, but again, appointees to trustees sometimes are, in the case of where Governor Sanchez is, he's probably seeing a vision or a mission that he wants to change at UWF. And you know, it's brought a lot of concerns because there wasn't a lot of local faces of familiarity in his list. And, you know, and this is why exactly we have the confirmation process in the Senate. That's why you got, you know, people like Senator Don Gates, who is chairing ethics and elections, who will then sit there to be able to help filter all that. If you don't like what you've got there, the great thing about it is you got a great fighter in Don Gates. You need to make sure he knows so these Senate confirmations don't go through, you know, and that's one way you get the appointing authority's attention. Look, they don't want to be embarrassed by their confirmations not going through, but the public needs to engage. And I think this is a wake-up call. It truly is.
Yeah, no, a lot of the community feels very much the same way. Jamie Petronas, he is the CFO for one more day till midnight, but he is a candidate for Congressional District 1. The election is tomorrow. Go out and vote. Jimmy, good luck tomorrow. Thank you for running. I always appreciate when people contend in these things, and good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, if anybody needs me, email me, jimmy@joinjimmy.com. Please go exercise your right to vote. God bless y'all. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.